But aren't we living in the days of Elijah? You know, the prophet Malachi says, you know, before the Messiah comes, Elijah would come to prepare the way. Boy, he's, after singing Days of Elijah, don't you just hope he comes back tonight? Woo! Oh, it'd be so great. We wouldn't have to worry about getting the stuff together for tomorrow, or not to. Woo! Woo! I always say to people, why would you want to live here when you can live there? Woo. That's awesome. So we'll have some announcements at the end. How many people saw Billy Graham's funeral service today? Did you see Franklin Graham's? Awesome. So Franklin Graham, his son, gets up. The casket's right in front of him. And he preaches the whole message of salvation. Did you see that? And then he, like, just about did an altar call with the casket right in front of him. And then he says, nothing would make my father happier than somebody come to Christ on the day of his funeral. I thought that was so cool. But, you know, because, you know, Paul, of course, is my hero. And if Paul had TV and radio and airplanes and all your stuff, he'd have brought as many people to Christ as Billy Graham did, but considering he did it on foot, he did a pretty good job. But, wow. I mean, nobody even knows. I don't know if any of you saw that cartoon with Billy Graham standing at the pearly gates, and there was an angel standing there that said, there's a couple of million people here that want to meet you. That was pretty neat. So last week we talked about Paul at the end of 2 Timothy chapter 4, where he said he's been working hard and he's got the crown of righteousness and he's done all these things, but now he's kind of dejected it a little bit. You know, he says, my time's coming to the end. You're going to have to take over. He says, there's people that have abandoned me. Alexander the coppersmith, he names, and Himenaeus, or whatever his name was, and a couple other people. He says, they've done me great harm. And he says, Luke's the only one who stood here with me. And he tells Timothy, you know, come as soon as you can. Bring my cloak. Bring my parchments. You know, he wants, like, things that make him comfortable as a human being. So tonight we're going to just go over quick, why did he do all that? You know, we like to preach the gospel if we're comfortable, right? We don't care about in-season or out-of-season. We want to do it when we're comfortable. We want to do it when it's sunny outside and it's 70 degrees and we don't have any pain and we're not sick in any way and we're not tired and we've had a good night's sleep and we had like a good meal. And, you know, we got a nice comfortable couch and chair and bed that we can sit on. And then we'll preach the gospel. But, you know, in 2 Corinthians, when he tells us, oh, man, I've been shipwrecked, I've been stoned, I've been beaten. The Jews have harassed me. The Gentiles have harassed me. Ugh. But he's doing it because 1 Corinthians 9. For if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I do not preach the gospel. He has an encounter. Everybody knows the road to Damascus. We don't know if he was on a horse. It doesn't say anything about a horse. But one thing we know for sure is that Jesus personally talked with him, commissioned him, blinded him, and gave him something to think about for 3 days while he was in Damascus. This is the Pharisee of Pharisees. No one, read the book of Galatians, no one was more zealous for the law than I was. Were like 10% of people more zealous or 18 people more? No, no one was more zealous for the law than I was. Nobody was advancing in Judaism more than I was. But now, I have to preach the gospel. It's laid on me. You know, he heard from the Lord that he's the chosen vessel to the Gentiles. When he was a Pharisee, he wouldn't have ever talked to a Gentile. he would have been defiled. Now he's apostle to the Gentiles. He went from being the most zealous for the law to being the apostle of grace. How cool is that? So he's willing to endure all these things. And, you know, we can roughly compare him to Billy Graham and others, but we'll pick Billy Graham since he just died and had an amazing, amazing, amazing life leading people to Christ through the gospel. He says, this is what I have to do. It's not about me, and it's not about my comfort, and it's not about whether the Jews welcome me, the Gentiles welcome me. I hope they have a little dinner for me before I leave. Or, you know, maybe we can be in a nice stadium again tomorrow. I'm going to do it because I got work to do as an apostle. Remember, an apostle comes from the Greek apostolos, that means the sent ones. All the apostles were personally chosen by Jesus, right? Including Paul, who later in Corinthians says, you know, I don't really deserve to be called an apostle because I came late and I persecuted the church. But, you know, I am what I am because of his grace. Then he adds, but I've done more than all those other guys. But, but you know, his personality still comes through. But he has work to do as an apostle. He's been sent out. Jesus says, you're my chosen vessel to the Gentiles. Remember when Ananias was sent to the place where Paul was in Damascus? We even know the name of the street called Straight. Ananias says to the Lord, I don't know if you've heard, Lord, but this guy's persecuting the believers. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but this guy's big trouble. You sure you want me to go over there? So after all, you know, sometimes we make our own plans. When he went back to Jerusalem some years later, the other brothers were afraid to meet with him. They said, we're not going anywhere near this guy. He's probably like infiltrating the movement. So he had work to do. It wasn't a choice for him. This had been, you know, now that we live in a computer age, we can say this was all downloaded into his brain. His revelation was so intense and so powerful that if you notice as you read through Acts, every once in a while he says, well, Jesus showed me this. Jesus told me that. Jesus told me this other thing. Maybe they had ongoing revelation. We don't know. But one thing for sure, he was told what his mission was. And he even says, I haven't been sent to baptize, but to preach the gospel. You know, he says, I can only remember two people I baptized. Then he says, oh, wait a minute. I'm going to baptize this other guy's family. So maybe I baptized five or six people. I don't know. But I wasn't sent to be baptize. I was sent to preach the gospel. And you can imagine why this was. Because eventually everybody knows who Paul is. Right? So if you went to one of Paul's revivals, and you came to Christ, and you went up to be baptized, you could walk around the rest of your life saying, I got baptized by Paul. Who baptized you? Some schmuck nobody knows. I got baptized by Paul. Who baptized you? Some Gentile guy? I got baptized by Paul. No, that doesn't happen. And he says it's a necessity for me to preach the gospel. You know, how many people remember Jeremiah in chapter 20, verse 9, where he says, today, I'm not going to talk about the Lord. I'm not going to talk about his law. I mean, today, I just don't want to deal with it. But then he says, it starts burning in my bones. And if I don't let it out, I feel my bones are going to break. How many of you have had that experience? Today, I don't care. I don't want to pray today. I don't want to read the scripture. I don't want to talk to anybody. But then you start to feel like, and you got to let it out or your bones are going to break. This is what's laid on him. When he has the encounter with Yeshua, he doesn't say, you know, I've been thinking about this now that I know that you're Lord. I've been thinking about maybe I should preach that. Maybe I should preach the gospel. You think you could let me do that? No, this is laid upon him. It's a duty that's given to him. It's not a choice that he makes. And some of you probably had that experience. You know, I used to go to my office a lot of days and I'd say, you know, today I'm not going to try to witness to anybody. I'm just going to try to work. And as Joan always said, do you ever realize if you didn't preach to people all day, you'd get home earlier? And I'd say, I know, but when it comes up, you have to do it. You'll say, you know, I'd like to preach to this guy, but today I'm not going to do it. So it's laid on him. It's a duty. If I'm not preaching, I'm not doing what he wants me to do. I'm not following him. Because after all, you know, when you read through Romans and Galatians, you see Paul doesn't have a life without Christ. His old self's been crucified. Our old self was crucified. Our sinful flesh was crucified. We don't even live anymore. Our old self's gone. I mean, sometimes our old selves come back out, but our old self is pretty much gone. Like when I'm storming around at the nursing home or somewhere. Oh, I don't do that anymore. Like when I'm storming around at the nursing. So I have to do this. It's a necessity. Woe to me if I don't do it. Now, I read an interesting quote from Billy Graham last week that I never heard before or saw before. He said, I'm one of thousands of evangelists who have been called. He's one of thousands. Thousands of evangelists are called, right? The Lord doesn't just say, well, for this generation, I'm picking Billy Graham. And for the next generation, I'm picking Joe Smith over there. And for the next generation, I'm picking... Thousands of people are called. Called to preach. So we're not supposed to boast about it. We don't boast about it. Paul always is clear to say there's no boasting involved. He even says that in Ephesians 2 about salvation, right? You're saved by grace and not by works, lest any man should boast. So if you were saved by your works, if it was a salary that you got, you know, like if you hire somebody to do some work in your backyard, and you say, I'll give you $20 an hour. And the guy works for 8 hours, does the work, and you say, here's your $160, right? Because that was the deal. But this isn't earned. He says, you're not earning your salvation, or else you'd be standing around in heaven with a bunch of people, and somebody would say, hey, let me tell you why I'm here. I did a Bible study every other night. I went to church every single Sunday, and the other guy goes, that's nothing. I did 18 mission trips, and I started a school. Another guy comes by and says, that's nothing. I spent my whole life in New Guinea preaching the gospel, left my family behind. Then Mother Teresa comes by and says, you know who I am? I'm Mother Teresa. No, you don't hear any of that, right? Because they're not saved by what they did. Paul says, I'm not boasting about this. This is what I'm supposed to do. You know, there's a gospel about the servant. You know, if you have a servant, in those days it could have been a servant, it could have been a slave. You know, and when the master comes in, and it's the slave has to make dinner, the slave makes dinner for the master, right? The master doesn't say, oh, if you feel like making dinner, you know, I'd really like some roast beef. And so there's a duty that's laid on him as a servant. Paul calls himself a doulos, which is not quite a servant, not quite a slave, but it's kind of in between, the Greek word. He says, you're okay. It's okay if you're compensated when you preach the gospel. We're not doing the whole passage. But he says, you know, I don't ask anybody for money, he says. I have the right to do it, but I don't. I preach the gospel for nothing. I don't ask anybody for anything, but I'm permitted to do it. In other words, when you have a pastor of a church, when you have ministers in the church, they're allowed to have a salary. Right? You don't say, well, you're the minister and you've been chosen by God to do this, so therefore that's going to be your reward. Because, you know, the guy's got to eat. And he's got to live somewhere. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, I've been entrusted with a stewardship. What is my reward then? That when I preach the gospel, I may present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I may not abuse my authority in the gospel. In other words, I want to preach this gospel cheerfully, willingly. I don't ask to be paid just because I want to present Christ to whoever's listening to me. And if I go to the synagogue, because remember, Jesus said you go to the Jew first and then the Gentile. So I'll go to the synagogue and I'll debate with them and I'll talk with them. Then when they throw me out, I'll go talk to the guys over here that are the Gentiles. And you see in the book of Acts, sometimes he would be in a synagogue in a debate. And let me tell you, Jews do a lot of debating. Sometimes over every word that's in a passage. And he could see out the window that there were groups of Gentiles waiting for him to come out because they wanted to hear what he had to say. And he didn't say to the Jews, wait a minute, you guys, I'm going to go talk to them first. Because he's following the commission to the Jew first and then to the Gentile. Remember when we did the thing about the vineyards? Not the vineyard church, but the two vineyards. One's in Isaiah and the other one's in Matthew. You know, when the people that are running the vineyard don't do what they're supposed to do, the vineyard's taken away from them and given to other people that'll bear the fruit. Isaiah explains that. Jesus explains it really well. Then it says, then the leaders knew he was talking about them. Because those Pharisees weren't stupid. They were educated. You know, some poor fisherman guy in Galilee might not get that. But they got it. They knew what he was talking about. So, he's not doing the work as a drudgery. Oh, boy. Tomorrow night I'm booked in this town at 6 o'clock. And I'm supposed to preach from 6 to 9. And I hope they're going to give me something. If they do, that'd be great. If they don't, that's okay. I'm just presenting the gospel, but I better... No, he doesn't do it as a drudgery. It's like when Paul, when he talks about in Romans and Galatians, when he talks about when you're under the law, you do things because it's an obligation. If I don't do it, I'm going to be in trouble. If I don't do it, I'm going to violate these laws. When you're in grace, when you've been saved by the Messiah, when you've been saved by the cross, you do things not because it's a drudgery and you have to do it. You do it because you want to do it. He wants to go preach the gospel. If he gets paid, it's great. If he doesn't, it's a stewardship. He's got to do it because he can be called to an account. Do you think Billy Graham heard that from Jesus? Well done, my good and faithful servant. I'm sure he did. You think Paul was waiting on the other side of the gate to give him a high five? I'm sure he was. Can you picture those two high-fiving each other? It sounds silly, but you get the idea. He was a faithful servant who did what he had to do. I don't know how much money he made. I'm sure he lived in a nice place. But he did what he was supposed to do. Because it isn't about us. So he says, what's my reward? My reward is I'm proclaiming the gospel of salvation. If one person gets saved during my father's funeral, that's great. If two people get saved when I go someplace and talk to 50,000 people, that's great. Because that's my reward. I want to see this happen. And it's more than a monetary reward because you're gaining souls for the kingdom. And you probably know a lot of people that you think are creeps. You don't really like them. But you'd like to have them be saved rather than spend an eternity in hell. Right? I learned that lesson. Well, sort of learned that lesson. The Sunday after 9/11, we were at a prayer meeting in Ann Arbor with Renewal Ministries. And it was evening. There was about 500 people in the place. Peter Herbeck gets up on the platform and says, we need to pray. Now, this is, you know, September 15th or 16th of 01. And he says, we need to pray for Osama bin Laden and his associates, I forgot what he called them, because Christ died for them. And I said, no way. I'm not praying for them. I want them to go to hell, and I want them to go today. If one of them was here, I'd shoot him just so he could go to hell right now. But then you realize, you know, he's right. Jesus died for Osama bin Laden just like he died for me. So Paul is in this because he wants to see people saved. For though I am free from all men, I've made myself a servant to all, that I might win the more. I'll serve people. I'll talk to people. I'll talk to them at the coffee shop. I'll talk to them at Denny's. I'll talk to them at the grocery store. I'll talk to them at the car repair place. I'll talk to them no matter where I am, because I want to win some of them. If they reject you, they reject you. Like, how many people have you witnessed to that have said, well, I don't know, that sounds kind of harsh, doesn't it? And you say, but what if I'm right? I say, if you're right and I'm wrong, you got nothing to lose. You lose nothing. But if I'm right and you're wrong, you lose everything. Billy Graham's wife said, if there's a 2% chance that what I'm saying is right, shouldn't you consider it? So, he was a Pharisee. And he was a Roman citizen. I mean, these are, you know, to us that doesn't mean much, but these were huge honors at the time. To be a Pharisee was a big deal. You couldn't just show up and be one. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, we don't have anything really to compare it to. But they were set apart. They were the Purushim. They were set apart. They were the holy ones. Remember the Pharisee in the temple that said, thank you, Lord, for not making me like that schmuck over there. I'm your guy here. And the other guy saying, have mercy on me, a sinner, not even looking up. So he was a Pharisee. He was a Roman citizen. Remember in Acts they were beating him, and he said, you can't beat me, I'm a Roman citizen. Then they went, oh, and they immediately stopped because you couldn't beat Roman citizens. You had rights under the law. Plus he was free in Yeshua. He was now free as we are with the grace that came from the cross. So he says, I'm free, but I make myself a servant to everybody. Remember what, if you come to the Messianic Seder, which we'll announce again later. If you go to a Messianic Seder and you see at the Last Supper, which was a Passover Seder, of course, when Jesus washes their feet, he says, you know, I'm Master and Lord and I'm doing this for you. So you got to do it too. You don't say, huh, I don't do that. I'm not washing anybody's feet. Let those guys back there wash somebody's feet. I don't wash my feet. I got all the holy stuff on. I don't wash people's feet. He says, no, if I'm doing this and I'm your Lord and Master, then you have to do it too. So he becomes a servant to gain more. To gain more. He becomes a servant so other people can be free. See? He could walk around saying, I'm a Roman citizen, I'm also a Pharisee, and you know what? Jesus personally intervened in my life and converted me, and he's made me apostle to the Gentiles, and so I hired this group of people here to, you know, kind of do the scut work. He says, no, I do the scut work, because I'm a servant, because there's no room for boasting. He has nothing to boast about. You have nothing to boast about. Because your performance is pretty anemic when you're done with your life. Right? If you kept all 613 laws perfectly, then when you died, you would go to your personal judgment, and Jesus would say, wow, wait a minute, you did everything right. You never violated one law. So I'm obligated to save you. Well, guess what? Nobody you know is going to go through that. Nobody living on earth is going to go through that, because everybody falls pathetically short, as he tells us in Romans. He says, it's not about me. It's not about me being this great evangelist. It's about getting the gospel to whoever you can, because that's what I've been commissioned for. This is the reason that I'm here. I know a man who's a Messianic Jewish believer. He was ultra-Orthodox. He was a rabbi in Israel. And he had a synagogue in a little town in the north. And he had a nice thing going. Nice synagogue, nice people. And one day he was getting his teaching ready for the next service. And he was reading the Torah portion for the following Sabbath, for the following Shabbat. And he heard an audible voice that said, what you just read is about me. And he knew instantly that it was Jesus. And he became a believer on the spot, fell to his knees, ran to the synagogue to announce this, and lost his job. So, when I met him, this had just happened a few months before, and I said to him, wow, you got this better than Paul did. He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, Paul heard Jesus. He said, who are you? I said, you knew who it was right away. He goes, I knew who it was right away. Isn't that cool? And to the Jews, I became as a Jew, that I might win Jews. And to those who are under the law, as under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. And to those who are without law, as without law, not being without law toward God, but under law toward Christ, that I might win those who are without law. I do love the way he writes. To the weak, and this is in very complicated Greek grammar, to the weak I became as weak, that I might win the weak. So in other words, when I was with the Jews, I became a Jew. Well, he was a Jew. When I was with the Gentiles, I became a Gentile. Now, when he went back to Jerusalem and people were saying, hey, you know what, Saul, or whatever you call yourself now, you know, you're not really a Jew anymore. You've been hanging around with these Gentiles so long. So he went to the temple, got all his hair cut off, and retook the Nazirite vow, more or less, to show that he was still one of the people. But now he was part of the one new man. When he was with the Gentiles, he did what they did. He ate what they ate. Didn't necessarily wash his hands before he ate. Didn't necessarily do all the other stuff he was supposed to do. He was different than Peter, who was wishy-washy. Peter sometimes was with it. Sometimes he wasn't with it. Sometimes it's, why are these Gentiles getting the Holy Spirit? Oh, I see God shows no partiality. He's eating with the Gentiles. Group of Jews come in. He goes, oh, he jumps out of his chair, leaves the Gentiles behind, and hangs around with the Jews. Paul said, I had to be in his face to tell him that's not right. Because either God has partiality or he doesn't. So sometimes he submitted to others that they might listen and be won over. He became whatever he had to become. And you may have, I don't know if you ever had the opportunity to talk to somebody who's a serious Jewish person, not a believer, but a traditional Jew. You know, if you talk about, you know, Jesus died for you on the cross, zoot. But if you say, well, you know, in the Torah where it says, you know, without the forgiveness, without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sin. And you know, the sacrifices and how these offerings were made. Well, this is what happened over here. They look at you and Some people say, nobody's ever told me that before. If you go to, you know, you can imagine all the different groups you go to. Now, you can't go to a bunch of people who don't know anything and hold up a Bible and say, do you know what Paul says in Romans chapter 8? They look at you like, Paul who? What's Romans? You know that. So he gets himself into every group in order to win some. It's amazing. This is totally different than when he was Saul of Tarsus. But he says, I don't violate the law when it has to do with Christ. I mean, he's not going to go worship Saturn in the temple in order to talk to the Saturn worshipers. He'll hang around with them, but he's not going to do some of the stuff they do. A few years ago, we were in Greece and we went to Corinth. And I couldn't wait to get there. I was like a little kid on the way to Cedar Point. And they have this place in the city where Paul preached in the ancient city. And there was a bema. It was a rock thing probably this high. They won't let you go on it because I wanted to jump on it. But they wouldn't, you know, you can't go on it. There's a thing around it. But right across the way from that is this huge temple to Apollo, the sun god. So I'm thinking, boy, you know, when Paul was standing here preaching, he's looking at this huge temple to Apollo with people going in and out of the place doing their Apollo worship, and he's there preaching the gospel. Kind of neat. So he approached people how they could understand him or at least would listen to him. Remember on the Areopagus, he's talking to the philosophers, and he says, oh, I see you have an altar to the unknown god. Because, you know, they had so many gods, they were worried, what if they forgot one? So they had an altar to an unknown god. And Paul says, oh, let me tell you about the unknown god. He's the creator of heaven and earth. And he sent his son to save you, and someday you're going to be judged. And they said, dude, relax. He always was ready to do the explanation, but he would never transgress his faith in Jesus. So he humbles himself and kind of becomes like them in order to save some. You take stumbling blocks away from the weak. So someone who doesn't know one verse of Scripture, you can't talk to them and say, well, you know, the Greek here actually means. Because I have no clue what you're talking about. Right? Someone who has no concept of sin, you don't say, well, you know, there are 613 laws that I have become all things to all men that I might by all means save some. Whatever I have to do in order to save some. It's not going to save all of them. Now I do this for the gospel's sake that I might be a partaker of it with you. Because he's a partaker in the gospel too. He's been saved by the cross too. Because I want people to come into the kingdom just like I did. Maybe not as dramatically, but just like I did. So for the sake of the gospel, it's for the cause of salvation. So I'll put up with the shipwrecks, and I'll put up with the stonings, and I'll put up with the beatings, and I'll put up with getting mugged by Jews, getting mugged by Gentiles, sleeping outside and freezing, being in a hot place to sleep, maybe not having any food today, because this is what I do. This is the reward. And I'm not even going to take up a collection. That's a joke. Although he did take up a collection for the church in Jerusalem once. So he does take up a collection sometimes. So the preaching of the gospel was what mattered to him more than anything else. Because it's not about any of us. Right? I mean, there's always trouble all through history, right? Book of Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing that happens today that hasn't happened before. But we see this dark, darkness that's come over the earth. I mean, those of us, most of us in this room are old enough to remember when things were different. What things were like when we were kids. Things were a lot different. Except you, because you're young. You're what? So now's the time, and like we've been talking about the last few weeks, there's a remnant of people left. A remnant of people that still stand on the rock, that still stand on the truth, that still stand on the scripture. Because the churches are just surrendering to the world. Because they want to be just like everybody else. They don't want anybody to feel bad. We need everybody to have a good self-esteem. We need everybody to get a trophy. We need everybody to leave here feeling good. And, you know, what God thought 3,000 years ago, he can't possibly still believe that. And if he does, he hasn't gotten with it yet. Because after all, he can't be the same yesterday, today, and forever. As it says in Hebrews, my favorite book. Because after all, we've evolved. And now we're progressive and we understand that, you know, what's a family? Oh, anything can be. Anything can be that. Oh, what's it? So this is the time when the Gospels become so urgent. And this is the time when the churches are falling away. But revival is going to start with the remnant that there is. You know, God always works with remnants of people. He doesn't work with tens of millions of people at a time. Small remnants. 12 guys. Prophet here and there. A few evangelists that went through the world. So now's an even more urgent time.